Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
What a show today. My God. And I'm not just talking about us. I'm talking about watching that Falcon Heavy take off.
Woo! Yeah, SpaceX. They make us so proud.
There are more people blissed out over seeing that since the first shuttle launch or the Saturn V launch.
Yeah. It's really the space age again here.
My goodness. I mean, that was just amazing.
Live Stunning. Launch. We watched it as we were coming down here in the car.
I pulled over.
Yeah, we stopped. You know, that would not be legal in France, but yeah. No, actually, you pulled into a designated parking spot. True. It would be legal in France.
Yes. Like, hey, Richards, come on. I said, oh my God, I got chills. What a show.
I love the synchronicity of it, because here we were. We have a story in our slate today about a Japanese rocket, which happens to be in counterpose the smallest rocket that has ever launched a payload to space. And so, of course,
As we were going over that
article, we remembered that February 6th is the date of SpaceX launching the Falcon Heavy. And just as we tuned into it, we got a text from Richard, who of course is our fellow space geek, and he said, live launch right now, spacex.com. And I was already Googling it when he chimed in, and sure enough, we caught it. Perfect timing. The whole thing was about 15 minutes of watching the countdown, watching the perfect takeoff, the launch pad filling with the rocket smoke, and then the beautiful launch, and then the pictures of the Red Roadster and Spaceman. And
yes, the Red Roadster Tesla, Elon's first car, is in space.
That's right.
On its way to Mars.
It's going to go around the sun.
It might take 100 million years in its current orbit, but it'll be up there.
Yeah, driving a Roadster to Mars. Who'd have thunk?
It's got a mannequin with a spacesuit in the driver's seat, and on the big screen on the front it says, don't panic.
Good advice on your slow trip to Mars.
Well, a classic sci-fi reference.
Yeah. Boy, I can just imagine the day when some space hitchhiker is going to be so glad to see that Roadster going by and have a little visit with the spaceman mannequin.
Go hang out in the she'll ride shotgun with him for a while.
Right. Get a little software update so that the Tesla jetpacks are engaged or something.
What surprised me was that the rocket just worked perfectly.
Yeah, it looked like a simulation. I mean, it was so perfect.
And apparently, they may not need to use the Falcon Heavy as much as they originally planned. When they first designed it back in 2010, 2011 time period, they thought about half of the launches from Elon's company, SpaceX, would be Falcon Heavies. But apparently, not necessary. Most of the stuff that's being launched now is lighter and more streamlined and can be carried on a regular Falcon rocket.
Oh, so I guess people are more interested in gadgets in space than space stations in space.
Well, right. Or carrying more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And this rocket, however, it doesn't cost that much more to send a lot more stuff in space. It's $92 million, I think, if you wanted to rent a Falcon Heavy.
Uh-huh. $92 million. Can you believe that? It used to cost $12 billion a year for the NASA program. $90 million.
Well, half a billion to launch the space every time and back.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, $90 million is a customer price?
$92 million. Half a billion was what the space shuttle cost.
Right.
Now we're talking $92 million of today's dollars for this Falcon Heavy.
Right.
Right now the spacecraft is journeying.
See, not everything has gotten inflated. You can go to space much cheaper now.
You can. And they're going through the Van Allen radiation belts as we speak. If they're successful in that endeavor, then the sports car will head away from Earth onto an elliptical orbit around the sun that extends out as far as Mars. So it will get out there with Mars.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I imagine that there's some chance that it'll be close enough to Mars that some future Mars mission can retrieve it.
Yeah, they probably will. They'll probably put it in a museum on Mars. And about 8 minutes after the launch, a pair of sonic booms rocked Cape Canaveral as the two side boosters set down in perfect synchrony with each other on their landing pads.
That was the most historic shot of the day, to see these two rockets that had just been launched 8 minutes before landing.
Yes.
Perfectly together, well, like twins.
It's the first time I've seen them two at once.
It was
like
beautiful.
That. It was stunning.
Yeah.
Yeah. Choreographed.
Thanks for the great video footage, SpaceX, and the webcast. You guys did a great job.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. So there you go. That's probably the most exciting thing that I've seen in some time. You know, and if you
it's
have a chance
so
to look
inspiring.
At that.
I mean, the stock market is zooming back up again. Something in the air feels just like everything's going our way today, right?
Definitely.
It's definitely a good day to be optimistic and get out there and do your thing and make your dreams come true and work for your success and ride the wave of abundance.
Meanwhile, we're going to tell you some of the stories. Also, we're going to have some special guests in the second hour at 3 o'clock. Every year, we've been featuring people from the What is Erotic troupe. And they're going to be showing us What is Erotic in Santa Cruz this year.
That's right. They must be getting up to 10, 11. What annual What is Erotic show is this?
We'll find out, but I think it's been since at least 2005 or so.
Right. So every year, brave, young, beautiful people in Santa Cruz learn how to express their answer to the question of what is erotic. And we're here to see what the theme is this year.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right, in the second hour. But meanwhile, we're going to get our space geek on a little bit more and tell you some of the other cool stuff that's happening. As we had mentioned, when the rocket took off this afternoon, we were just talking about the Japan project to launch the world's smallest rocket to carry a satellite.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about that. And leave it to Japan to do the miniature version of the Falcon Heavy.
Well, over the weekend, they launched a miniature satellite. It's a modified SS-520 sounding rocket. It's a little tiny rocket, and then they launched a payload of just 7 pounds. The SS-520, I think it's 35 feet long, really small.
That's a small rocket, huh? Yeah. That still sounds pretty big.
Yeah.
And but it's, you know, it's only a third of the height of a redwood tree. Okay.
Yeah, so it was successful in delivering its TRICOM 1R payload into space about 7.5 minutes after liftoff. It's got cameras on board, 5 cameras that'll take pictures of the Earth. It measures only 4.6 by 4.6 by 13.6 inches.
Including the antenna.
That's right. That's right.
So it's just this little box with an antenna and a bunch of cameras.
They're next expected to launch as part of a suborbital ionospheric mission later this year. But all eyes have been on the Falcon Heavy. But this one, it shows you how you don't always need to be big to be successful. So it's kind of cool. So the biggest and the smallest are launched in the last couple of days.
All right, listen, we're going to go to a little break here, and then we're going to come back, and we've got a few more space stories and future stories, so stay tuned. Dr. Future on KSU. Nothing is real. Wasting my time in the waiting line.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. A few days ago, we went to visit one of the pioneers of vertical takeoff and landing machines, aircraft. The original, Dr. Paul Mahler, who's been pioneering aircraft that fly like hummingbirds since he was in college. Mm-hmm. He's now 81 years old and still pursuing that dream.
Yeah.
I thought it was rather interesting because we are helping him connect with the right people to move things forward in his project. He's within reach of a successful hummingbird VTOL flight.
Flying cars.
Yes.
Coming this way.
And other people are being successful in that arena too right now. It's like a renaissance in flying.
Sure.
For example, this week also EHang announced their first passenger carrying drones with actual people on board.
Mm-hmm.
EHang 184 is a Chinese drone. that carries people.
Okay. And where did they fly? Tell us about the EHang.
They basically made an oversized drone, a really big drone that can carry...
like a Phantom, except big enough for people.
It carries people, and it's designed to be autonomous so that it can carry two people without any pilots on board.
Mm-hmm. It must have about a 500-pound payload.
Yes, that's right. That's right. It can carry, as I said, two people.
Two people, but not their groceries?
500 pounds, 230 kilograms. They did a routed test covering 9.3 miles. And a high-speed cruising test that reached up to 80.7 miles per hour.
So they went almost 10 miles, and they went at 80 miles an hour. So they flew for 8 minutes.
Right, and they also tested it in a variety of weather condition, high heat, heavy fog, night tests, and a Category 7 typhoon with gale force winds.
Really?
Just to see if it would handle up. Clearly, that would be a big test.
I bet there were not people in the test with the gale force winds. Yeah. I'd say that was an automated test flight.
Even further the gale force winds, possibly.
I mean, because they can send it without people anytime they want. Mm-hmm. Sending it with people, the people have to be willing.
They do. They're one of the first companies to actually test this. Dubai is working with Germany's entree in this arena called the Volocopter on an air taxi service as well.
Right.
And EHang just got permission from the state of Nevada to test out their machine at a UAV test site there. It's all electric. It can carry a passenger up to 10 miles, 23 minutes of flight. A person in the cockpit doesn't do anything. They just sit there and watch. They put in their destination and enjoy the ride.
Okay. You know,
which is considering that's what people want to do. They want to, like
Uber, that's different than, say, the Terrafugia, which it's an airplane
that
folds
can
be
up its
car.
Wings and become a car,
And it does do VTOL.
Really?
I believe.
Well,
I was
be
reading
surprised.
About it this morning. They're claiming that they're the first VTOL.
Actually, going straight up, a short takeoff and landing is another story.
Mm-hmm.
The EHang is actually a drone. Now, we talked to Dr. Mahler, quite extensively about the EHang. He's written white papers about it. He doesn't think that the most successful aircraft will be electric.
Right. He believes that electric has severe limitations in terms of taking things as heavy as passengers.
Yes, and he believes that a much more suitable engine for these type of craft are liquid fuel engines, specifically modified Wankel engines.
And a hybrid, because he does think that the battery is very good for the 10 seconds that's required for the vertical takeoff and landing. But after that, the battery is shot, and it's not the ideal way to propel yourself to your destination.
Until the batteries get much better.
Because they're very heavy and they discharge very quickly.
EHang has proven that they can fly, but you see, Mahler doubts that EHang could really handle bad weather with people very easily. He just feels that just scaling up a drone doesn't make a lot of sense, that you have to change the design to handle bigger weights.
Well, even if you look at the best drones, as far as I know, I've never met a drone operator who hasn't lost their drone, whose drone hasn't flown into a tree, whose drone hasn't become disturbed by some environmental factor that was unanticipated and died. So having one of these things safe enough for a human being to depend on a regular basis, as opposed to just for a test flight, is quite a leap from just upscaling a battery-operated toy.
Yeah. So a lot of innovation going on in this arena. We do have a local drone company that's trying this too, Joby Aviation.
There
you
go.
Which we'll be checking into soon.
Right.
Love to talk to the Joby folks about being on the show here.
Yeah. So there's a lot of companies in this space. So there are people who are saying that they're going to be mass producing cars as early as 2019, flying cars. And they'll be available at a reasonable price within the next 5 years or so. So we'll see if these predictions are real.
Yeah.
We're ready.
Yeah, we're ready. Can't wait to go out on a ride like that. That needs to be so cool.
There's a good reason you've been practicing your drone piloting skills, honey.
Yeah, think?
Right.
I'm getting good at piloting drones. You know, maybe if I can control the joysticks of the drone that I'm in.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're wearing your goggles and the drone is this vehicle out there or the one that you're riding, the control is going to be the same.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be. It could really be. God, something to look forward to here.
Woo. Yeah.
Okay, other news. Scientists found evidence of thousands of planets, not just in our galaxy, but in a distant galaxy.
Ooh.
Yeah, so there you go. So we're getting so good.
So we've been looking for exoplanets in our very own galaxy, now we can see them outside our galaxy.
A number of our listeners sent us reports on this, and that's really exciting. Scientists hadn't detected planets outside of our Milky Way really much before this. It's just too far away for that to work. But with these new techniques of using gravitational lensing, you're able to see much further away.
Right. And of course, people can tune into the show we did maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. We talked about that gravitational lensing quite a bit and what scientists are doing to be able to decipher whether or not a planet is actually out there. They have to look at their spectral analysis. They have to look at their radio waves. They have to look at their gravitational waves and do some pretty fancy math to deduce.
So this galaxy we're looking at is called RXJ1131-1231.
Who is the naming committee for these things?
Yeah, I wonder what they call our galaxy in some other location. Probably not the Milky Way. This galaxy warped light, and we were able to look at it very closely. And through the warps in the light, irregularities that are perceived, you can ascertain that there are rogue planets in that galaxy, that right. The gravitational lensing has been taken to a new scale. And no one thought that we could do this gravitational microlensing to this extent, but we're doing it.
Mm. Yeah, this article surprised me that one of the things that distinguishes a planet is the rhythm of the signals that are measured. So the fact that the same signature is observed, say, on what is calculated to be an orbiting planet around a star, and it happens regularly enough that they start saying, oh yeah, there's a planet there.
Somebody sent me a question. If you could bring Elon Musk Tesla back from space, would it still work? Well, thank you, Ryan, for that. I have no idea.
Yeah, send that one to SpaceX.
Yeah, we'll send it to SpaceX.
They're live on Twitter.
Probably some damage would happen
it's been to outer space and back, right? We don't know that it's coming back.
No, it's not coming back. So it's a
one-way trip.
You want to be able to send something to like Mars and have it work.
I'm thinking this is Elon's plan.
Yeah, to have his
what am I going to drive when I get to Mars?
Yeah, right.
If I send the car first, then I can bring a few more of my friends.
Yeah, it's a two-seater. A lot of your friends, not so much, huh?
Everybody else is going to have to walk, but Elon's going to drive. That's his style.
Yes. Where would you want to go with it? I don't think that you can really take it to too many planets. I think it would probably work on Mars. It's electric. Maybe one of these exoplanets would be nice. All we need to do is have a breakthrough in interstellar travel, and then we'll start thinking of the universe a little differently.
Oh, there you go, Dr. Future. Now you're talking.
And we keep on thinking of it as an impossible distance. But as you can see, we're turning solar system space into something that's navigable, about the level of the great sailing ships of the 17th century.
Where's Mr. Scott when you need him?
I know. So we
got to beam us up.
Yes, exactly. So, but we're thinking about it.
We want to go at the speed of light. The speed of Tesla Roadsters is too slow. Yeah. Guess what time it is?
Time for a break.
News.
All right. Well, also, somebody wants to nominate Elon as president of the world.
Cool.
Of the world. Maybe solar system.
He is inspiring. That is for sure. All right. We'll be right back.
Okay, we're going to do some speed coverage in this because so many stories, so little time.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Going to be a marathon today, huh?
It will. One of the big news from in the space arena is a gravitational wave observatory, a space-based gravitational wave observatory. That's for looking at gravity waves, which is considered the most exciting thing in astronomy right now. And to have a space-based gravity wave detector is just like a major thing for astronomers. It's a new kind of detector that will just open our ears to entirely new sources of gravity waves. These are very, very tiny changes that come from these detectors to be able to get outside of the influence of the planet to see what else is going on in terms of gravity waves in the universe is really, really important. So a consortium of scientists from NASA and the European Space Agency recently used the LISA Pathfinder spacecraft as a test to see whether a future experiment could reduce the noise, the background noise, so that you could hear the gravity waves better. The test was passed with flying colors. It demolished expectations. It performed about 20 times better than it was required to look at gravity waves. Just making many scientists very ecstatic, like the University of Florida, Peter Wass. He says, quote, "I think the results announced today are a demonstration that our technology really works. We know how to build a gravitational wave detector in space, and when we do it, we'll be confident that we'll be able to see these immense supermassive black hole binaries." And he's really excited about binary black holes, obviously.
Who knew you could get so excited about watching a black hole binary?
Yeah. Well, you know, Einstein had once predicted that some super insane space events like black holes colliding should create ripples in the shape of space-time that travel at the speed of light. We first detected those back in 2015, some experiments called LIGO, L-I-G-O. That got the 2017 Nobel Prize in Physics. The observatories around the world started spouting gravity waves from neutron stars colliding. So it's not just black holes, but neutron stars. And so a new era of astronomy began, which relied on light.
Sure. Light that is filtered through gravity waves.
Yeah. And a whole new era of astronomy. On light and gravity together to understanding astrophysical phenomena. So big breakthroughs on that. Very exciting. Thank you, Richard. He says the Roadster will be in an elliptical orbit between just past the orbit of Mars. Yeah, it can actually will go out as far as Mars. That's pretty wild, huh?
Yep.
It'll probably take a long
time.
Who
needs a rocket? You can have a car in space.
Yeah, that's the Tesla Roadster from a previous conversation before the news. That's what the comment is on. Now we'll be able to look at gravity waves as well. Some people have been wondering, why didn't he put some, you know, instruments on the Tesla? Why is he going to launch just the Tesla Roadster with this giant rocket? Why not put something useful up there as well? But hey, it's his rocket.
I think he's a very practical fellow. Yeah. He has to test it so that he can give other people confidence that they can send up some payloads.
I wouldn't be surprised if other stuff does get up there or was up there. They're just not talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got the Roadster to glamorize the conversation. And all the other stuff is just packed away in crates and much less interesting.
Meanwhile, back on Earth, France bans smartphone use in cars.
Right. That's where we started.
Yes. Even when you pull over.
Even when you pull over.
Even
so
when you
what
pull
is
over.
Going on in France? Are they having terrible accidents with
people?
Well,
yeah. Yeah, they've had a big uptick in road deaths. Road deaths have been on the rise lately, and there's nothing much else to pin it on. So they're going after drivers who text or call. And so now it's illegal to hold your phone on public roads, even when you're pulled over to the side of the road, whether you're blocking traffic or not.
You can't hold your phone, but can you use it?
The high court ruling means that taking what some consider to be a safe step, pulling over to talk on the phone, could still result in a fine of 135 euros.
So what do they want you to do? They want you to pull into a parking lot?
Well, it's not enough to pull over and cut the motor. You have to be parked in a designated spot.
You have to get parking.
Unless you've been in an accident or a breakdown, then you can call or text.
Oh, okay. A little leniency if you're having a bad day.
But you see, they do have a reputation for crazy driving in France.
They do?
They do.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah,
do they drive fast?
I mean, Quebec is like that, too.
Is it road rage city? What?
I don't know.
What is their reputation?
R stands for race. On your transmission? I don't know. Something like that. It's not good. You're not good for driving safely anyway.
All right. Well, good luck with them. I hope they cut into their casualty figures.
Well, they reduced their speed limits from 90 to 80 kilometers on two-lane roads, and that upset people dramatically. Their version of AAA has a problem with this new cell phone ruling, saying they think it'll do more harm than good.
Because
they think they should encourage motorists to stop when they're using their phones.
Right.
So now if you stop, cops go by.
They figure
at the people
it's
who stop.
Just as expensive as if you get caught driving, so you may as well keep driving.
Yeah, you might as well get tagged. What does it say about passengers using phones?
Well, obviously people passing laws like this think that it's their job to control the drivers and the people using the phones, and that the people driving the phones shouldn't be consulted about their desired solution.
Yeah.
It's just, we have power, we will take away your rights.
And speaking of taking away rights, did you hear about the UK judge that upheld Julian Assange's arrest warrant?
Ooh, what happened there?
A British judge upheld the arrest warrant for the WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange,
today. So he had petitioned them to drop the arrest warrant because the original case that he was being arrested for had been dropped back in Sweden, was it?
Sweden, yes.
So the Swedish case is no longer being pursued, and the arrest warrant from that case has been dropped. However, the UK judge is holding Julian Assange. They want to put him in jail for skipping his bail, for not showing up in court.
And if he gets put in British jail, he could be extradited to the U.S. where he would face espionage charges.
Right.
He's been in the Ecuadorian embassy since 2012 after the Swedish prosecutors were looking to arrest him over those allegations of sexual assault and rape.
Right.
But Sweden, as you said, has dropped that investigation. But he chose to remain in the embassy because he was afraid that he'd be arrested for breaching bail conditions in Britain and then being extradited.
And so if they arrest him at all, then I'm very curious. I guess the laws don't work that the U.S. can arrest him, because they would just say, I don't understand why it had to be Sweden that was trying to arrest him.
Well, they're the ones that had the rape charges against him in Sweden.
I understand that. That's back then. But if these charges from the U.S. about espionage have been outstanding the whole time, why do they even need the arrest from Sweden? Why do they even need to have him go to a British jail? Why don't they arrest him?
Extradite him from where he is?
Yeah, extradite him already.
Because he's in an embassy.
Right. But if they dropped the arrest charges, he could leave the embassy. But it sounds like there aren't other arrest charges from the United States who really wants him.
I don't know.
I know, it's a mystery.
I don't know.
The whole thing
not...
sounds extremely cloak and dagger.
They're keeping him in, and he's not getting out at this point. And, you know, I think that he has pissed off a lot of people in the deep state.
And everywhere else.
Yeah, and it's a situation that's continuing to get from bad to worse for him. And especially WikiLeaks' connection with Russia. I'm sure Robert Mueller is on that one.
I'm sure he is.
You're looking into that.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, maybe Mueller can give him a pass so he can come and talk to him about what actually happened with WikiLeaks in Russia.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting
thing. Didn't we watch a Julian Assange documentary not that long ago?
That's right, yes.
Who was
Don't
that
ask by? Me the name of it.
Yeah, okay.
But it was a fairly new one. It was 2016, I think.
Right.
It covered the period of time when he was being arrested.
Yeah, it actually had live footage of him dodging his bail hearing in England and going into hiding.
Yeah. Another sticky wicket issue that's going on. Also, this is an end of an era for CDs. Believe it or not. Yeah, the whole CDs.
Awful lot of artists are going to be sad to hear that.
Yeah, Best Buy will stop selling CDs this summer.
Oh, well, they were probably not a big marketplace for artists anyway.
I'm sure they dropped
anyway.
Way off, right?
Yeah. So they're going to stop selling content.
July 1st.
And CD players as well?
It doesn't say that. The streaming music services are doing 62% of the total market now for music.
Is there a music stream coming out of one of your devices
here? I thought it was you,
Miss
Sweetheart.
I don't think it's me.
No,
it's you.
All right. Well, let me take that. Yeah, you know how you pull up web pages and they start playing?
Yeah, I do.
That's what we're dealing with here. Yeah, I was going to the Fortune article that talks about the end of the CD. The CD format, music streaming, is exploding. 62% of the total market for the first half of 2017 now. And it's amazing how fast the technology is changing. We'll no longer have globs of plastic with music on it.
Wow. Listen, we got to go to a break.
Okay.
Dr. Future Show. We'll be right back.
Okay, thank you, Richard. More clarity on the trajectory of the Roadster now that it's in space. The Roadster will be in an elliptical orbit just past the orbit of Mars and back through the orbit of Earth as it orbits the Sun for a billion years.
I see. So the mannequin is merely going to orbit in space.
It's going to be up
Roadster
there for a while.
The Roadster is only going to circle the Sun.
Yes.
Never land on Mars.
Unless somebody comes and picks it up.
Yeah, it seems to me it's going to be a supply ship for somebody.
Somebody's going to get it. You can count on it, especially as it gets more and more normal to where we have yachts in space. You know, somebody's going to get it. Yeah, so a couple interesting stories this week on our atmosphere. One on the ozone hole. Mm-hmm. Did you see that one? That was quite interesting. We've always been told that the ozone layer is supposed to be healing.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it's not really healing. Now, with the widespread adoption of what's known as the Montreal Protocol, atmospheric ozone stopped decreasing, and measurements of the upper stratosphere indicated that the ozone levels were recovering. And it was such a significant result, we thought, that leading models predicted 100% recovery by 2100. But unknown to the investigators was the concentration of ozone at lower altitudes. So contrary to expectations and with no explanation for how it happened, the lower stratosphere appears to be losing ozone, so much so that the total amount of ozone over the most densely populated areas isn't increasing at all.
Oh, dear.
What does it
this
all mean?
Oh,
that's the UPS guy.
Okay.
As the UPS guy here.
Yes, we have a guest dog in the studio today, and you know what dogs do.
Yeah.
They let you know when trucks arrive.
Louie, hey.
I'm going to let you carry on.
All right, yeah, you carry on. Deal with him, will you? It's a radio station. He thinks he's alerted us to the UPS guy, but maybe we got something. You never know. Hey, Mrs. Future is going to do that. So the reason for the continuing decline is not really understood. We really don't know why the ozone is doing its thing. So that's the bad news about the ozone. What's also interesting about the atmosphere was the great article on the number of bacteria that are carried around the Earth every day. This atmosphere is just raining viruses and bacteria everywhere.
They're just too small for us to see.
Yeah, it's just raining. If you want to open up your window and take a big breath, you know, it's not just going to be air. It's going to be viruses and bacteria coming in from all over the planet. This sounds bad, but most bacteria are not harmful to us.
And the fact that you just heard the news does not mean that anything new is happening. You're just focusing
just
on a more granular level of what's in the air.
Hundreds of millions are being pushed into the winds all the time, and they're carried aloft for thousands of miles, and they tumble back down other parts of the world. And analysis of the DNA of viruses have shown that they've come from all over the world. There's 800 million viruses are deposited every square meter.
Now, you are a person who likes to be a friend to viruses. Is that true?
Well, I just know that most of them are part of the microbiome ecosystem that is healthy. There's just a very small, lousy 2% of them, maybe less, that are not good for us. Most of them are, and chances are that they are delivering goods and services to biological life forms throughout the planet. My belief is that the viral network is mostly good, mostly useful, and without it, we'd probably not live.
All of the good viruses don't get any good press, and all the press goes to the bad viruses, so we live in fear going to be needing a vaccine.
But we all
needing
a
cure.
We've been learning about the microbiome. We know that 100 trillion bacterial cells live in the human body. 100 trillion. That's like 5 of them for every human cell, approximately. So we couldn't live without them. This is new information, but it's new for us to be able to figure out that viruses from around the world are visiting us every day. Viruses and bacteria that like to fly.
And swim.
And swim, yes.
And dig.
And get around. I don't know how organized they are. Maybe they have networks in which they move, but who knows? Who really knows? We're just beginning to investigate that.
It's amazing when you think about how many things are below our radar.
Yeah. Oh, another interesting thing. There were some scientific studies that looked at what we like to eat. Rutgers researchers have found that insects were the food of choice for our early primate ancestors. Insects. All right? And that we, us 21st century humans, are still made to eat and digest termites, crickets, beetles, and other such things. Our digestive system can handle eating insects.
Things with an exoskeleton, like lobster.
Well, I don't know.
That's not an insect, no. I know, but it is similar to an insect.
Yeah, well, maybe a little bit. But the system for us digesting them is still there. And there are a lot of differences between primates, obviously. Some eat more insects, some eat more fruits and leaves. But we're finding that this study in molecular biology and evolution really shows that this could be an alternative food source for us. The scientists studied the genomes of 34 primates. They were searching for copies of a gene called CHIA, C-H-I-A. That's the stomach enzyme that breaks down chitin, which helps make up that firm outer covering of an insect. The scientists discovered that almost all living primates still have working versions of that gene. So we're looking at genes in the human, and then they're there for us to this day.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's my understanding that there are lots of people on the planet today who regularly ingest insects. Grubs, I think, is a pretty common one. Of course, there's always jokes about getting chocolate-covered ants, crickets.
Well, we've kind of a nasty view of insects, pretty much. You know, so we have to get over our mentality about them. But once we do, we can see that they contain carbs, protein, fiber, vitamins, essential minerals.
They're animals. They're creatures. They're creatures.
The exoskeleton, the carbs and protein in it, and minerals. Yeah, who knows? Maybe Doc Wallach could get some product that incorporated this.
I believe that there are insect-based protein powders out there.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. That 3.5-gram portion of pork and crickets each contain about 20 grams of protein. And caterpillars, when it comes to calcium, mopane caterpillars knock it out of the park. So they have way more calcium than the same amount of pork, something like 10,000% more. In the Asian countries, this has been much more embraced than here. But if it comes in powdered form where you really don't see it as an insect, it would probably be more palatable and combined in new ways. I thought that was interesting. There's a new recipe book out called Eat a Bug Cookbook by David Gordon.
Good to know.
Yeah. And he gets into weird stuff like deep-fried tarantula spiders and such. So
that can't be good for you.
You don't think so?
Deep-fried.
No,
don't
well,
think
deep-fried,
so.
Yeah. But everything tastes good deep-fried,
and
it seems.
The only thing is that it's much worse for the tarantula.
Yeah. God, so we don't have much time left here.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Our guests are going to be here very soon.
Okay. All right. Well, then, let me just really quickly just mention some of the other titles before we go. A comet hit the Earth about 13,000 years ago and caused a mini ice age. There's evidence to show that that happened. We have a new satellite called GOLD, which is looking at the upper atmosphere, and it's going to help us figure out the critical boundary between space and our atmosphere. So we've got a new satellite studying that will revolutionize space weather as we know it. How is it that the atmosphere isn't escaping out into space? What is actually happening at the boundary layer that keeps us having an atmosphere?
So the GOLD satellite is going to teach us about the limitations of our atmosphere.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And also that the global warming that's happening is harder for reptiles to get used to than mammals.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. We have so much more ability to stay warm in so many ways than they do. That's got to work in an era of global warming.
Yeah, it's got to. Oh, and thanks, Richard. Final note on the Tesla car in space here, that the car is going to be on an extended tour through the Van Allen radiation belts that surround the Earth. And my guess is that that might have an effect on the way in which the car actually functions. I don't think Tesla cars were designed to handle radiation.
Space radiation.
Space radiation, no. So for that question about whether or not it would still work.
It looks like it's mounted on the outside of the rocket.
Yeah. Yeah, that the Earth is a six-hour coast to deep space that intends to demonstrate to the Air Force that the Falcon Heavy can meet specific orbit insertion patterns. So if the car survives, then it will continue to be in elliptical orbit around the sun and that at times will come close to Mars with an extremely tiny chance it will actually hit the planet.
KSCO, yeah. Santa Cruz.
That's right. So it's Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned. We'll be back after all the news and weather and all that good stuff.
With our guests from What is Erotic?